top of the morning to you. Welcome to Shattering Myths, the program devoted to those of you who, like me, have come to realize that the world's religious, political, economic, military institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, that they cannot be fixed. If you'd like to know more about them and why we have come to this conclusion, we encourage you to listen. If you'd like to participate, you may call me. I'm Yada. Toll free, 877-300-7645. Yesterday, we ended the news hour of the program affirming that the President of the United States is a resolute liar. Now, you might say, that's disrespectful. Why would you have any respect for a resolute liar? I mean, just because he was elected by idiots, absolutely ignoramuses, for a second term of president doesn't mean I need to respect him. I have no respect for the office. I have no respect for the man. He lies most of the time.
I would say that if somebody continuously chooses to makes the choice to lie, mm-hmm. that's them disrespecting me. I'm not somebody's parents. You can tell me the truth, and I'm not going to ground you or punish you.
Right.
I'm reasonable enough to where I'm probably not going to beat you up, you know.
No, I might disagree with you.
I might disagree.
But if you're going to constantly lie to me, say that, for example, you're in favor of free enterprise when everything that you speak about is command and control from each according to their ability, to each according to their need, you're a communist. So let's not pretend to be supporting free enterprise. Let's not pretend to understand economics when you haven't even worked at a McDonald's. Never worked for a private business in your life.
When you say something along the lines of that business, you didn't build that alone. That tells me right there that you have no idea what people...
No idea. You've never made a payroll. You've never dug into your own pocket to make an investment in a business. You've never written a business plan and executed. You've never done any of those things. You have no right to be talking about the economy, much less running it. So the idiots that elected you, shame on them. But that's not why I'm calling him a liar, of course. In this particular case, after telling us that the Islamic State was not Islamic, and then bombing the number two leader of the Islamic State in an Islamic mosque while he was praying, and at the same time that the head of the Islamic State, who is an Islamic imam, demonstrated that all Muslims must engage in violent jihad, or Allah will see to them that they are tortured in hell, he cited the Quran over and over and over again, never misquoted it. Didn't take passages out of context. He demonstrated using the Quran that the Islamic State's behavior is wholly and completely consistent with the Quran, and that any alternative to what the Islamic State is doing is wholly and completely inconsistent with the Quran. So makes the Obaminator a complete liar when he says the Islamic State is not Islamic, and then he says they're not a state. Well, if they're not a state, then what are they doing controlling areas of the Middle East that are larger than most every Middle East country? I mean, they're controlling areas that are larger than Kuwait, larger than Qatar, larger than any of the United Arab Emirates, larger than Lebanon, larger than Jordan. The areas that they have under their control that they are governing are larger than most of the Islamic states. But most recently, the Obaminator, after telling us that America has never and will never be at war with Islam, both of which are lies, told us that when he would send thousands of troops into Iraq, that those troops would only train the Iraqi defense forces. Well, that turned out not to be true, because we're spending most of our time trying to rally the Iranian Shiite militias because the Iraqi defense forces are a waste of time. And he said, we would not have boots on the ground. This is not a mandate for us to put the boots on the ground in Iraq or in Syria. And then he launched a boots on the ground raid in Syria. But I guess it's okay because we got a bad guy, or so we say. You know, when the news came out, it was supposed to be the number two leader of the Islamic State, and by the time that they had shuffled the deck of cards, they said, well, he was a sort of high up. But the news was that we have crippled their capability. It was a major blow that the Obaminator and his military struck on behalf of the good guys fighting the Islamic State. And what's happened since then? The Islamic State has captured Palmyra, but far more important, they have captured Ramadi. I have said on this program at least 1,000 times that if you choose to use weapons of war, bullets and bombs, to fight Islamic militancy, you will always make the situation worse. Everything you do, everything, every bullet you shoot, every bomb you drop will be counterproductive. That's exactly what we have experienced now for 14 years. It's 2015. We're a few months away from the anniversary of our debacle in the sand, when we decided to invade Afghanistan and Iraq, where at the time I begged America, doing thousands of radio shows, writing hundreds of articles and nearly a score of books on why that would turn out exactly as it did. Begging America, don't do this. This is stupid. This is counterproductive. It turned out exactly that way. When you declare war and you begin fighting against a religion that was born of war, was born to fight, where Muslims have no reason to live, only a reason to die, all you do is play directly into their hands. You can't resolve this problem with bullets and bombs. You can't pretend to be pro-West and equip and train Iranian-inspired, Iranian-led militias in a war against Sunni Muslims. You can't pretend to be training Sunni Muslims to go fight Shia Muslims. You can't arm both sides and expect a peaceful result. We invaded Iraq. We broke the country. We removed from power the Middle East's best dictator. Yeah, he was a bum. Welcome to the world of Islam. He happened to be the most anti-Islamic terrorism, most anti-Islamic fundamentalist in all of the Islamic world. There was no terror perpetrated in Iraq when he was head. Christians lived there in security. Persians, the Zoroastrians, lived there in security when he was president. There were churches. There were shrines. Now they don't exist anymore. The Yazidi sect of Zoroastrians have been enslaved, robbed, and pummeled, and the Christians have been annihilated, all because we invaded Iraq and made a bad situation worse. And now a country that had previously, under Saddam Hussein, experienced one or two very minor terrorist attacks each year, experiences scores of major terrorist attacks every day. If our goal in Iraq was to diminish Islamic terrorism, was to fight Islamic terrorism, then I got news for you. We not only poured fuel on that fire, we lit the match. And now we're fanning its flames. There is nothing we could have done that was more counterproductive than what we did. And yet America is unapologetic, hasn't learned a twit. So now the Abominator, lying again, saying he wouldn't send boots in the ground, sends in troops to get a Islamic militant from the Islamic State. And the first thing that happens thereafter is the Islamic State captures Ramadi and they capture Palmyra. The raid in Syria, this is the article that was written on it. I should say President Obama has said that the U.S. forces, which have been conducting airstrikes against the Islamic State in Syria and in neighboring Iraq, will not enter either of those countries in a ground combat role. But that's exactly what we did. He lied. And he knew that he was lying at the time. Although several U.S. troops were in our training, or several thousand U.S. troops are training Iraqi forces. By the way, they're training Shiite forces. They're arming Shiite forces. The administration has said that there are none in Syria. They lied. The raid in Syria came as the Islamic State forces in Iraq tightened their grip on the city of Ramadi. In a significant setback to Iraq's U.S.-backed government, and it's really Iran's U.S.-backed government, the capital of Iraq's largest province said that the militants were executing dozens of civilians and then blowing up their homes. It's kind of like Vietnam. You know, in Vietnam, while America was there and then after America left, but primarily while America was there arming the South Vietnamese, doing the same thing we're trying to do now in Iraq. You know, it was an utter and complete failure in Vietnam and led to millions of people being killed. The same thing is true now in Iraq as we arm Iraqis on both sides. The communists, when they finally took over the country, which was a fait accompli, just as it is, that was a fait accompli the moment America invaded Iraq, that the Shiites from Iran would take over the country. And then the country would devolve into civil war as Sunnis and Shias began to fight a civil war, and that would obviously spill over into Syria, and then into Lebanon, and then into Jordan, and then into Saudi Arabia, and all of a sudden we're fighting World War III. The Vietnamese went door to door, and if they suspected anyone of sympathizing with the South Vietnamese government or with the United States, they had arms and legs cut off. Their children had hands cut off. They were stigmatized. Their homes were burned. So what's now happening in Iraq? Those that we abandoned because we told them, oh, we'll stay with you, we'll be loyal to you, you can depend on us. Well, those that we rattled the cage, we broke the country, we deposed the dictator, and now they were subjected to Shiites, they were mutilated by them, and so the Sunnis have returned and are doing that same thing to the Shiites. And the defense official described Abu Sayyaf as, quote, fairly high up. Oh boy, that gives me such confidence in the Islamic State hierarchy, but not among the most senior militants tracked by the United States. But yet we were willing to contradict the express vow of the President of the United States not to put boots on the ground, to go off and get this guy and to kidnap his wife. In addition to directing oil and gas operations, oh, that's why we went after him. Okay, he was directing oil and gas operations. And that's a threat, of course, to Saudi Arabia. It's going to discount their earnings, and we wouldn't want that to happen now, would we? Abu Sayyaf was also involved with the group's military operation and likely in contact with Islamic State leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the White House said. Wow. And if you salute the flag of the United States, if you respect its institutions and its leaders, there's something seriously wrong with you. The Islamic State fighters have seized the northern part of the ancient World's Heritage Site in the city of Palmyra in Syria, a monitoring group has said. A World Heritage Site! You know what's there? Some columns, some trusses on top of the columns, all with images of Baal, the Lord. It's a all it is Palmyra is a mix of way prior to Islam. We're talking about 2nd, 3rd century CE. So we're dealing with things that are 400 years prior to Islam. Islam didn't build anything, of course. They're just wholly destructive. But 300 years or so prior, 400 years before Islam's formation, there was an area in Syria called Palmyra that had previously been used by the Persians in particular as a religious shrine to Baal, the Lord. Satan, for those of you who are looking for a more clear identification. The Lord in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms is always Satan. And this site then had substantial influence by the Greeks because Alexander the Great, so he is called, overran this area as he was pursuing Darius, his great rival. And in addition to that, you have then after Alexander, the Romans. Thought that they should be masters of the world and they should be able to tax everybody. And there were a number of cultures they had a very difficult time warring against on the frontiers. And on the eastern frontier, with the Eastern Roman Empire in particular, Persia was a foe they never really ever beat. Persia never really ever beat Rome. Rome never really beat Persia. They would win a battle, lose a battle, gain some territory, lose some territory. This is kind of in that area. So these ruins are have influence of the Roman, Greek, and Persian religion, all centered on the Lord Baal. And that's the area now that is being overrun by the Islamic State, and the world is just having a conniption fit because the United Nations thinks this is one of the great cultural centers of the ancient world. You know, shrines to pagan gods, it doesn't do it to me. Syria's antiquities chief said that hundreds of statues had been moved to safety. However, the fighters had not yet reached the ruins, and yet they were battling throughout the second century area where the Greco-Roman traditions had mixed with Persian influences, according to the article. Militants have seized oil and gas facilities in the region. Capturing the city would also be an important strategic gain, says the BBC Arab Affairs analyst Sebastian Usher. Thank you for stating that, because I don't think we'd have been able to figure it out on our own. Turning the page to the following day, the strategic Iraqi city. It's not just strategic this time. This is the capital of the largest province in Iraq, the city of Ramadi. It has fallen to the Islamic State after government forces abandoned their positions. Police and military made a chaotic retreat after days of intense fighting. Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi had ordered troops to stand their ground, saying that he was deploying Shia militia into the city. See, the Prime Minister is directing Iranian troops. That's the mess that we have created. There's more to know about this, and all of it is hideously bad. Exactly what we promised would occur. As I stated, Ramadi is the capital of Iraq's largest province, which is called Anbar, and it's just 70 miles west of Baghdad. A statement purportedly from the Islamic State said that its fighters had purged the entire city. Purged. Isn't that an interesting term? They didn't capture. They weren't occupying. They had purged. Which means that if scores were killed, then the vast preponderance of the people had to have been Sunni Muslims, which is the case. So you've got a Sunni militia purging the city of Shias and of Sunnis that sympathized with the Shias, is precisely what has happened here. A very well-placed source said that the Islamic State had taken the 8th Brigade Army base, along with tanks, missile launchers, and other weapons previously belonging to the United States that were left behind by the United States Shia domestic army. Remember when Mosul happened? What happened with the capture of Mosul was that the Islamic State, using Iraqi Sunni army officers in their merge between Petraeus's awakening program and al-Baghdadi's, the Islamic State in Iraq, all of a sudden became a legitimate army. Legitimate army. They were fighting in tank formations. They had artillery. They had rocket launchers. They had surface-to-air missiles. They had all manner of guided missiles. All of a sudden, they were a formidable army because they captured the enormous wealth of military weaponry that the United States had left behind and had given to the Iraqi Shia army. But the Iraqi Shia army had used those weapons to pummel the Sunnis. They used Apache gunships to scrape civilians. They used artillery to bomb the civilian centers. They used their tanks to go in and blow up and mutilate Sunnis. And that's when the Petraeus' awakening program of Sunni officers and al-Baghdadi's Islamic State in Iraq, his Muslim jihadists, joined forces to defend themselves against the army that America had trained and equipped. That's how all this began. And the first thing they did was to liberate Sunni areas from Shia atrocities. They started in Mosul. They still control it. And now they've just captured the second largest Sunni town and the largest Sunni district of Iraq, Ramadi. And in so doing, they're now hugely better armed. This is the problem of arming both sides. Providing people with weapons simply exacerbates the problem. The weapons that America gave to the Shia Muslims in the Iraqi military are now under the control of and being wielded by the very Muslims America is fighting a war against. Our own weapons being used against our own weapons. What a mess. All of it eminently predictable. In fact, there was no chance there was going to be any other outcome. So when it was announced by the Obaminator that he was declaring war on the Islamic State after the fake decapitation of the American journalist, I told everyone who would listen that this will be counterproductive, that it will make a bad situation worse, and this will be the exact result of our declared war on the Islamic State. They're going to gain more recruits. They have. They're going to acquire more weapons. They have. They're going to obtain more territory. They have. They're going to become eminently more popular with Muslims around the world. That's exactly what has occurred. They will tailor all of their messages to express the Quranic endorsement of their jihadism. Precisely what has occurred. This was all predictable. And it's not just that they're going to continue to control large swaths of Syria and Iraq, but this war has been weaponized because the Iranians are now deploying Hezbollah. And it has been heavily supported and involved by Iran. Iran's defense minister is himself. Iran's defense minister is the individual now who is overseeing the counteroffensive against Ramadi. Iran's defense minister, not Iraq's. Everything that we said was going to happen has happened. It may be worse than what we said, but not by much. And when it was this easy for me to tell in advance exactly what was going to occur, why did the idiots like the Abominator, like Senator John McClown, like Lindsey Graham, why did they commit us to such a counterproductive and foolhardy policy? Why are they still fanning the flames of a war that is counterproductive? What's wrong with us? The way to deal with Islam is to isolate it, is to expose it and to condemn it. Not to talk nicely about it. To expose it for what it is, to condemn it because of what it does, and then to isolate it. Stop supplying weapons. Stop buying anything from them, including oil. Isolate it, quarantine it, and let it die of its own devices. Let them kill one another, but not with our weapons. Not with our money. A very well-placed source in the Anbar governor's office told the BBC that Ramadi was now under the full control of the Islamic State. All government troops had withdrawn. A follow-up article. A full-blown humanitarian crisis has developed from the Islamic State's takeover of Ramadi, as an estimated 25,000 Iraqi refugees are now making their way toward Baghdad, seeking food and shelter wherever they can find them and facing the prospect of being blocked from the capital amid fears their ranks could include militants. Yeah. And this is the problem we had in Vietnam, same problem we had when we invaded Iraq and Afghanistan. It is impossible to know who the enemy is. The enemy and your alleged friend, the very people you're allegedly there to protect and to liberate, are indistinguishable from those that you're fighting. That is exactly the nature of Iraq. We pointed that out when America invaded Afghanistan. And then when it was considering invading Iraq, it's impossible to distinguish who is friend and foe. The person you think you're helping is just as likely to hand you a hand grenade as a loaf of bread. A bullet rather than a Snickers bar. And like Vietnam, because of the atrocities that we perpetrated on the Vietnamese, and especially because of the influence of Islam now in Iraq, those that we allegedly were there to help hate us. So we have no friends. It is only are the adversaries wholly and completely vicious, or are they? Do they have enough restraint to say, you know, if we play along here, we're going to be given enormous amounts of money and enormous quantities of weapons. So let's play along with some rhetoric and let's not just annihilate every American we can. Let's play along. And then we'll be empowered over our religious foes here and then empowered to impose our will on surrounding countries. That was really all you had. Those who were overtly committed to killing us in Iraq and those who would play along because of the money and weaponry we were providing, only to turn that weaponry and money against their own and against us. Predictable, foreseeable, unstoppable. So now we have a full-blown humanitarian crisis in a country that America broke. The United Nations and other agencies were handing out food, water, and medical supplies along the 60-mile route between the cities. But the situation was worsening amid dwindling supplies and reports of Iraqi army. The Iraqi army was blocking the refugees from reaching the safety of Baghdad. The Iraqi army. The Iraqi army who retreated from Ramadi because they were too cowardly to fight the Islamic State and retreated, leaving all of those weapons for the Islamic State to use, they're absolutely willing to turn to their weaponry on unarmed civilians. That's the nature of Islam, isn't it? We're full of bluster when we're not engaged, but we only want to fight civilians. They are the very Iraqi army that America is supplying the weapons and money to fund and to equip is the roadblock on people, refugees, finding safety. Now, how in the world you can fix something like that? How is more weaponry? How is more money? How is more gloating and wonderful, inspired verbiage by the John McClown or Lindsey Graham or the Abominator or Hillary Rotten Clinton? How is their rhetoric going to resolve any of that? You know, when your choice is to side with and to arm merciless, repulsive people in their fight against other merciless, repulsive people, the only thing that is known for sure is that you're going to be engaged in the middle of a fight between repulsive, merciless people. I don't know how that's good. I don't know how you twist that somehow to make a good out of those two evils. But nonetheless, that's where we find ourselves. Now the crisis could be coming to a bloody head as the black-clad jihadist army. By the way, you know why they're black-clad? Muhammad had three colors. And when he led a jihadist raid, his jihadists wore black. The black-clad jihadist army is moving east behind the refugees. Oh, my God. Who are now stuck on the bank of the Euphrates River. They have the Islamic State shooting at their backs. They have the Iraqi Shia army shooting at their faces. And it's a mess that was created by America. So here we have the Islamic State attacking from the rear, the Iraqi army attacking from the front, defenseless, scared civilians, tens of thousands of them caught in the crossfire between American weapons in a country America broke. Ah, but you can go thank a service man or woman. You know, I'm currently in a town that has NGIC in it. And, you know, where you go in this town, there's always 2, 3, 4, sometimes as many as 12, 15 people in uniform, all officers. And NGIC is National Ground Intelligence Center. And it exists for one reason, and that is to decide where we bomb. Where we send our drones and missiles, who we kill. That's its purpose. It comes up with targets for America to attack. These people are sitting there having a hamburger next to you, having a Cobb salad, and you just look at them and, you know, and everybody wants to, oh, I appreciate your service. No, I want you to go to hell. That's what I want. The idea that you're killing people using my money and my name, my country's name, making bad situations worse, continuing to make the same mistake over and over again. Look at the mess you made. Where's your conscience? Look at the mess you made. Yeah, you were the guys that came up with the targets for shock and awe in Iraq in the first place. And now look at the consequence. If you, any of you had a conscience, there was a moral fiber among anybody that worked for the NGIC, you'd resign. You'd vomit as you walked out the door. You'd shed that uniform. Look what you've done. Look at the people being killed now with your weapons and your war. Now the crisis, as they said, coming to a bloody head. And those left behind in Ramadi, where the Islamic State is going door to door to root out government sympathizers, were braced for more fighting as Shiite militias were summoned by Baghdad to help counter the Islamic State and to mount a counteroffensive to retake the city. Once home to 750,000 people. Oh, that was before we broke it. Even the decision to launch a counteroffensive to recapture the largely Sunni capital of the Anbar province is fraught with peril. Yes, welcome to the world of Islam. Welcome to the world of American malfeasance. The Iraqi army's humiliating defeat there has left Baghdad with little choice but to make a deal with the devil. The battle-hardened and Iranian-backed Shia militias, not backed, controlled Shia militias, that offer the best chance of retaking the city, are wholly and completely religious fundamentalists, religious jihadists, and wholly and completely loyal to Iran, not Iraq. The Shia militias, including the formidable Badr Brigade, Shia fighters, you know, the Badr Brigade was the most ruthless foe of America when America occupied Iraq. They were absolutely merciless. They're the ones that orchestrated not only the capture and kidnapping of American personnel, both military and civilian, but they're the ones that would strip them of their clothes and then have women and children beat them with sticks and then would lacerate their bodies. And then they would drag them still alive behind cars along the street as others hit them as they were dragged along, scraping their skin from their body. And then they doused them with fuel, with gasoline, and then they burned them alive. And then they hung their burned carcasses from bridges where the women and children would spit at them and mock them. Now, this is the group that America's military is now equipping, is now working with, as opposed to in opposition to. That's the mess that we have created. The Shia fighters who sided with Iran during the 1980 Iran-Iraq war are all massing outside of the city, some 70 miles west of Baghdad. Their plan is to go in with the Iraqi army troops and oust the Islamic State, which raised its flag over the city center on Sunday. Oh, there's even worse news.